Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Dylan Sessler. Dylan is a mental health coach, a professional speaker, podcast host of The Dylan Experience, an entrepreneur, combat veteran, and author of the book, Defy the Darkness, a story of suicide, mental health, and overcoming your hardest battles. So welcome to the show, Dylan. I'm really glad to have you on.
Appreciate it, Scott. Always glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the listeners who may not be familiar with who you are and your background, would you be able to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think a normal person. I don't see myself as being extravagant or, you know, ridiculous or anything like that. I've been through a lot in my life. I lost my dad to suicide at 6 years old. I was abused by the next man in my life physically, and then bullied in high school. I joined the military, went to Afghanistan in 2012, and also in 2019. And I also went through my own battle with suicide. And I find myself now in a place where I'm just working on my own weaknesses, you know, and the weaknesses that I've had throughout my life has always been remaining silent. You know, I've never been able to, or I shouldn't say I'd never been able to, I didn't have the capacity to express myself and share what I was struggling with through most of my adulthood, you know, even into 25 years old. And so now, you know, I've set against myself to work on my weaknesses, develop them into strengths. And now I'm sitting here with you talking about myself and talking about what I've been through, which is in complete contrast to what I've been through my whole life. So I would say I'm a normal person that just is trying to, you know, grow and adapt and overcome the battles that I faced. And I think what I've done with all of my content, with my podcast, with my book, is trying to help other people do the same. So that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. And I think the struggle that you were talking about basically remaining silent and not opening up and talking about the things that you have had going on in your life is somewhat common, especially back, you know, a few years ago, 10, 15 years ago, even longer,
yeah,
where mental health was looked at kind of as a, this taboo subject. You didn't talk about all these types of things, or if you were going through something and you did tell someone about it, you'd likely get a, well, just suck it up and deal with it kind of response. Yep. And, you know, we're realizing now that's not the best way to handle these types of situations. We need to be able to open up and communicate some of these things that we're going through in order to be able to heal from what we're going through. Right.
Absolutely. You know, I look at it very, very simply of, you know, like my battles, suicide specifically, was I always looked at suicide as the problem. It was always the thing that I needed to set myself against to not do. Or it was always the thing I looked at with my dad of that was the problem, but I'd never realized that perspective was very short-sighted. And now I realize that suicide isn't the problem, and, you know, neither are other things that you deal with, but suicide specifically for me wasn't the problem. It was the result. It was the end game of all of the problems that existed throughout my life. And it caught me by surprise when I started asking questions about what led to that point, right? In 2015, why am I here? Why am I doing this thing that I've set myself against for so long? How did I find myself in this place? And when I started asking those questions, I started realizing, looking further back and recognizing how each kind of element of my story and my narrative kind of led me to this point, simply because I didn't know how to express myself, because I didn't know how to ask for help, because I didn't know that suffering in silence was a futile effort, right? It was ultimately going to end in self-destruction, because it's a lot easier for me to struggle with my own issues than bring them to someone else. But ultimately easier doesn't mean it's the best way, right? It just means it's easier for you. And so, you know, now I look at all of those things and I practice the hard truths, you know, the hard realities. I step into people and I ask people the hard questions, right? Like there's no point in creating more disconnection in the world when we can be sitting here and having these hard conversations, talking about hard topics like suicide. You know, when I was growing up, suicide was one of those things like you didn't talk about because you might will it into existence. Well, that's just a fallacy, right? It's the more you talk about it, the more connection you create. The more you open up about it, you know, if I were to say, you know, I've been thinking about suicide and Scott, you thought about it a while back, you'd be like, I've been there. I relate to that. Right. And I want you to know that I've gotten through that myself and I can help you, right? That creates connection. But if I say, you know, I've been thinking about suicide and you say, well, stop, right? Now what I've learned from you is very simply that you are not a safe place to come and talk about that. Or if you are my only safe place, now I have no safe places to talk about it. Now I keep it within, and that does no one any good in the long run.
No, it doesn't. And what you were talking about before when you started talking about this as suicide being the result of all these other issues that you were going through, it makes sense to think about it like any other deadly disease that you might have, a mm-hmm. cancer or some other heart disease or something like that, where if left untreated, you're going to expect that the end result is probably going to be death unless somehow some miraculous recovery takes place, right?
Right.
And it's very similar, I think, with a lot of the mental health issues, where if they are left untreated over time as a natural result of the buildup of all the stuff that has been going on in someone's life, you can almost expect that something like that would take place, you know, some of that self-destructive behavior.
It's compounding interest, right? When one thing happens to you, it's not that bad, right? You can usually get through that. But when that one thing extends its life to beyond what it really needs to be, right? And you add another thing. And then because it's that idea that when you compound these ideas, right? So for example, my life, I lost my dad to suicide 6 years old. I became silent. I increased my understanding of guilt and shame and regret almost instantly, but I didn't have a place to talk about it. So that life of grieving that I was supposed to kind of work through in those first few years extended itself for 20 years, right? You add on top of that the compounding idea of child abuse, right? Inability to talk about it, that extended itself for 15 years, right? Bullying, that extended itself for 10 years, right? And then ultimately, I went to Afghanistan. I saw rough things. I saw terrible things. I saw what people could do to people. And that extended itself for another 5 years, right? And these things that could have been discussed, could have been exposed to me, explained to me, taught to me how to process these things were not. And so now, not only am I dealing with one thing, I'm now dealing with four other major life traumas that are now sitting on top of me. And because they're in my box, I have to deal with them. I have to figure out how to compartmentalize them. I have to figure out how to process them. And if I'm not given the maturity, the knowledge, the space, the safety, the connection, I'm not going to do it, right? I'm going to sit with them. I'm going to deny myself the capacity to process them because I just don't know any better. And that's what happens to people, is that oftentimes our environment compromises our ability to express ourselves. And so when that happens, you lose the opportunity to, you know, cut out your debt right away, you know, pay back that debt, get it over with. But then it's just like student loans, right? You just build up and build up. And here's this interest rate. Now you've got to put a mortgage on top of it. you know, now you've got to get a car loan. And so now you have three loans when you should have had none, right? You should have one or two, right? A long-term loan or something like that. Like it's, you know, not necessarily to compare it to finances, but the ideas are pretty similar. It's like when you add too much, people are going to struggle. It's pretty natural.
Yeah. And that's a good analogy. I think it does make sense when you think about it in a financial term, where if you're borrowing more than you're able to repay, you're going to struggle. That's just basic math. You're not going to be able to give it back. Now you can't put a number like a dollar amount on a particular trauma that you've experienced or your ability to quote unquote pay that back over time, right? But the idea is similar. If you were to assign a value, whatever that number is, and you know, assign another value to your ability to repay that or to work through it, you would see the same kind of math where it doesn't balance out, or it takes an extraordinarily long time for that to balance out. And then meanwhile, you're adding new things on top of that over and over again, and which just makes it harder and harder to get down. And eventually you're going to get to a point where that bucket of debt is just overflowing and you can't do anything with it.
Right.
Yeah. So when I was looking up information about this episode, I found, you know, stuff about your background and you know, I found all these things that you've gone through, and you mentioned a lot of this earlier in this episode, you know, the child abuse, your parental suicide, the PTSD, all that kind of stuff. Right. And we can talk about how all of those things came into your life. And if you want, if not, that's fine too. But what I'm really interested in is how you're able to overcome the PTSD, the depression, the anxiety, and all that stuff that you are living with. Basically going back to that financial analogy is how are you able to pay down that debt and get to a point where now you're living closer to debt-free?
I think the first thing that I really needed to understand was I needed to learn, right? I needed to learn what the difference was between my reality and the reality of what I wanted to become, if that makes sense, right? Yeah. Because I think reality is a really interesting word because we craft it and yet it doesn't fit what we see in the real world, right? Like we look at people and we're like, how do you not understand that this is what reality is like? That's the funny thing about reality is reality is whatever you make it. Your perception is your reality. And so my perception of reality was very skewed. It was very, you know, it was very wrong in the direction of trying to survive, right? I was willing to not take care of myself at the expense of other people, at the expense of, you know, my life, you know? And so what I really needed to understand was, one, I needed to know who I was first. And so I really dug into how did I live my life so far? How did all of the things that affected me teach me to be me? Right. And I think this is, you know, you kind of look at this as psychology 101, you know, of looking at yourself, looking at your narrative, looking at your life, and how did it teach you to be this person that you are now? And when I looked at that, I was mortified. Right. I was remarkably uncomfortable with all of the ridiculous and dumb choices that I made throughout my life to get to where I was, because it wasn't logical. And I could have sat there. I could have sat with that idea of like, this wasn't logical, Dylan. You are the worst human being. How terrible of you. But that wouldn't have been fair to me because all of the decisions I made were actually quite rational at the time. Right. And I look at the difference between rationality and logic as being rationality is all of the feelings you've ever felt in your life are valid. They're real. They're tangible, right? You made decisions, cause and effect because of them. But logic is different. Logic is that ability to look beyond the emotions, look beyond the feelings and recognize this feeling isn't necessary for the long term and for the extent of my life. I need to be able to work through this. So I recognized that there was a difference between those two ideas. And to then apply that requires me to be remarkably self-empathetic, right? Which is something I was not good at for 25 years of my life, because I was, you know, I was regretful over my dad's death. I was shamed over my dad's death. I was guilty, I felt, of my dad's death. And so many things taught me that I need to be the problem. And I had to be remarkably self-empathetic to say, you're not, right? You're a part and a piece of the puzzle, but you are not the whole picture, right? And to be able to kind of take a step back from your life and say that, I think requires a level of courage that is so difficult to step into, you know, and that's why people are still struggling. That's why people are still dealing with this stuff, is because the real step isn't into the direction of telling other people. It's really into stepping into the darkness of your life and saying, you know, a lot of this isn't your fault. A lot of this isn't your problem even, you know, a lot of this is just a part of life that found you. And now you have to find a way to respect yourself enough to continue to live. And so it required for me a lot of contemplation of what my values were, and being very realistic, you know, there's that word again, about how to apply them to myself. So I look at, you know, my three main values are empathy, integrity, and learning. And learning was this whole kind of culmination of, how do I understand trauma? How do I understand suicide? How do I understand, you know, life and death? How do I understand sociology, psychology, all of these things? And then what brought me to understand myself was really this idea of empathy, right? And I define my idea of empathy as listening to understand. Well, that's a really interesting concept, because it requires you to listen to people that are going to tell you the truth, to understand it. It's not to defend yourself. It's not to attack their character, you know, put their problems or my problems on them. It's to tell me what you think about me so that I can listen to understand what you mean, right? Because everybody has a different picture of who I am, you know? And so I forced myself essentially to listen to what other people had to say. I listened to what I had to say, most importantly. To listen to understand yourself is a remarkable skill. And I think that's one that's just not taught enough. And that ability really came from, I think, solidifying my own integrity. What is right and wrong for me? Well, I had to say in 2015, when I almost, you know, killed myself, I had to say, you cannot degrade yourself. You cannot self-destruct anymore. You cannot look at yourself and say all of these problems are your fault. And so that required me to make it a rule to stop being negative to myself, you know, and if I can't be negative, I just don't say anything, right? If it can't be positive, don't say anything, right? And so I didn't put this effort into trying to be this positive person. I just tried to create habits that said, just don't be negative. Right. I think that's a Trevor Mawad technique from It Takes What It Takes. And unfortunately he passed, I think last year or the year before, but I think that's an incredible book to kind of help understand that it's, you don't put the car from reverse to drive. You have to go to neutral, then go to first gear, second gear, third gear, and to operate in a capacity where you can respect yourself requires you to not disrespect yourself first. Right. And then from that point on, it was really about just continuing to hone that skill, you know, practice the values that I put in place and say, okay, if you want to be self-empathetic, right, you have to have a willingness to listen to yourself, right? And not just the pieces of you that say you're the worst. You have to listen to the pieces of you that say you're also the best, you know, because they're there, they're just really quiet. And so it was really that those first 2 years was a lot of learning. It was a lot of developing the values that I now put in practice, you know, and how to then craft the connection between those values to make everything that I do very easy, very simple, very focused on progression of my meaning of life in many, many regards, because I look at the meaning of my life as I enjoy the passage of time, right? There's a comedian that said that once, and I really like it. And so now I look at my life and I say, I want to enjoy this. I want to enjoy life. And so all of my values are built to help me do that, right? Am I going to make all the money in the world? I don't want to, right? I just want to be able to enjoy my time with my wife, my son, and my soon-to-be daughter. You know, I want to be able to come on podcasts, enjoy conversations like this, listen to people, learn from people, you know, write books and share content with people that helps them, so that I can look at them and say, I enjoy that you get to enjoy life. You know, that's what makes me happy. And so it requires work. It requires effort. It has required me to approach the problems of my life, right? Before the result. And that is always a challenge, but it's, you know, every day, even now, I still, you know, I practice the very same principles that I kind of started in 2015. And it's brought me to this place of, I mean, I can't tell you the last time I thought about ending my life. I used to live for 19 years thinking about it every single day. And now I can't even remember the last time I thought about it, right? That's a remarkable, you know, that's a remarkable truth about my life that I'm like, I'm surprised every day sometimes of like, how do I do it? You know, and sometimes, you know, I give this eloquent answer, I think, but sometimes I don't know. Sometimes there's a piece of me that I don't know how I did it. And I think that's also important to recollect that, you know, as much as we think we know, we also don't. And that's a very important piece of ourselves to recognize.
Yeah. And I think when the listeners are hearing this message, I think it's important for them to recognize a few things that you were just talking about. One is that what you just said is that it does take work. It does take effort to get through some of it. It's not like you're going to, you know, find a magic potion or something that's going to just pop you right through it. Yeah. But part of the healing process is that struggle, so that you can appreciate the other end of it, right? So anytime you do anything that's difficult, you, at least this is true in my life, you tend to appreciate the end result a whole lot more. You know, if you just had that magic snap of the fingers and boom, everything's rainbows and unicorns, it's not going to be as much as appreciated. And you'll probably be more likely to slip back into that place that you were before, because you don't appreciate all the work that it took to get you to that place. But the other thing that you mentioned a little bit earlier was about perspectives and how your perspective is different than somebody else's perspective. And two people may have experienced the same exact situation. They may have witnessed the same event. They may have been in the same situation, and they may have two wildly different perspectives about what happened. Yeah. I know this is true because when I was writing my book, I went through the sworn statements that the soldiers wrote regarding the events surrounding the death of my brother and how he was killed. And there was about 20 or so sworn statements, all from soldiers who were there on the ground. And they all had slightly different accounts. They were all talking about the same event. You could tell that they were all talking about the same event, the timeline and the sequence of things. But they all witnessed different things. Not to say that one was right and one was wrong or anything like that. They were all right, but they were all different at the same time. Right. And that was really eye-opening to me. And it made me realize that just because I've experienced something one way doesn't mean that that's the only way that that particular experience was experienced. Right. And it was very interesting for me to read through all of those sworn statements and try to piece together things through all the redactions that were in there. But, just trying to piece it all together, but it all told a bigger picture of the story. And so I think each one of them was equally valid and important to have.
Yeah. That the idea and the concept of narrative, I think is far more powerful than I think people really recognize.
Yeah.
The story that you tell yourself about yourself or others, it really determines your perception. It determines how you think, And so if you, for example, how I looked at my dad, right? When my dad died, I felt like I knew he was never coming back in that moment. And I genuinely believe that. I remember that feeling so vividly. And what that did for me in that moment of when I crafted that story, I blame myself, right? I looked at him. I remember, telling him not to leave. But what I found at 6 years old, right? I looked at myself and I said, it's your fault. And I told myself that story for 20 years until finally one day I nearly ended my life. And that was the reason that I started to look at myself and say, wait a second. You just put yourself in a situation where it was nobody else's fault but your own. And you've been sitting there for 20 years looking at your father's death as your own fault. This was your choice to be here. So it was his choice to be there, right? And in that moment, I looked at that story, right? That story that I had built up and been so set on, I had built this foundation of everything on that moment, right? Everything that happened beyond that was literally because my father made a choice, but I never gave him the choice. I gave myself the choice. It was my choice to stop him or not stop him, even though it was completely illogical. It didn't make any sense. It was just the story that I created within myself. And so when you start to recount your stories or the stories you have of others or other people's stories, you have to very much be cognizant that how you rationally put that story together or how someone else rationally put that story together doesn't always mean that's the reality of the picture. And you have to be very mindful of the fact that that story can change, right? It can adapt, it can grow. And even 20 years later, like I did, it can be completely rewritten to a place where I look at my dad's death and now I'm honored to be in this position right now, because 100% of who I am right now is very much in reaction to what happened that day, right? That's not to say my whole value is built on what my father did. It's just that I wouldn't have chosen to do this work more than likely if that hadn't happened. I wouldn't know, who knows what would have happened otherwise. But I do know that there were certainly other possibilities in my life had he not. And so now I'm here, standing against and standing for giving people the very thing that my father never had and giving people the very thing that I never had. And that's an honor to me. Like I look at that moment that my dad made that choice, not as a bad thing, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a good thing, but it's certainly not a bad thing. And I find that now that I look at that and I have the willingness to say that this is an important structure of my life, this is an important story, the way I tell it defines how I move forward with it. And I've found myself in a situation where I have nearly 600,000 people on TikTok that follow me that value the content that I share because I talk about real stuff like suicide and trauma and sexual assault and violence. And I talk about these things in ways that helps people in a way that I needed and my dad needed. And so now what he did has given me the opportunity to speak to people and to share my story and to share what happened. And that's a very good thing in my mind.
It is. It's unfortunate that it took such a tragic event for that to kind of materialize in your life. But as I was saying before, sometimes you have to go through certain struggles to be able to appreciate what those struggles have taught you and what they've provided you in your life. And in your case, the struggle of losing your father and for all those years tormenting yourself and telling yourself that it was your fault and that as if you had a choice in the matter, right? And you're beating yourself up over all of this just to come to the realization that, first off, no, it wasn't your fault. And now you can look at the work that you're doing and think to yourself, this is helping prevent another six-year-old kid from going through the same sort of life that you have gone through and blaming themselves. Maybe their parent is going to have that struggle to get through whatever it is and get over that hurdle that they're trying to get over, but they'll still be there, right? Yep. And so they won't have quite the same traumatic experience that you had growing up. And I think that is something that you can look back on and be proud of and be happy about. And that's the perspective that I think that shift that people need to have is just changing that perspective in the way they think about things.
And it requires good timing, right? Because you can't just walk up to someone that's struggling and say, change your story and you'll change your life. Right. You know, it's not that simple. And that's why I didn't start with that when you asked me the question of how did you do it? How did you overcome this? I didn't start with that, right? I started with understanding. I started with learning, right? Mm-hmm. Learn who you are. Learn about what has happened to you. And then as you go forward, you have to respect the idea that you can move forward, that you can live beyond where you might believe you can. Certainly 7 years ago, I didn't think I'd live to see 26, let alone 30. And now I'm 32. I didn't think I'd see to see myself get married. I didn't think to see I would find myself having a child, right? I didn't see all these things in my future, and certainly I didn't see myself writing a book or being an influencer or being on a podcast, right? Like 15, 20 years ago, I was silent. Like I was the kid that did not talk to people. And now here I am actively finding podcasts and content to make and speaking my mind on my own podcast and sharing deep and intrinsically intimate thoughts about myself. And if you were to tell me that 15 years ago, I would have laughed at you. I would have been rolling on the floor. You know, it just wouldn't have made sense to me that I would have been doing this job and this work and this support that I'm giving people. It just didn't make sense back then. But the things that can change so quickly is all dependent on how you start that process of learning and how you develop those values that you see to be true, and how you then tell your story. It's all about how you time all of those things and how you appreciate yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've said that you have fought your battles alone so that others don't have to. And in your mental health coaching program that you have, how is it that you help other people fighting their battles?
Oftentimes, which this is a really good question. I find myself offering up the very thing that I wish I would have given myself, right? I had a mother that was so incredible, but I didn't give her a chance, right? And that was to my own fault in many regards. I didn't have the words back then. I didn't have the understanding back then. I didn't have the perspective back then. I didn't have all of the things that I needed to really feel comfortable sharing things with my mom, right? And what I do now is I give words to people. I give understanding to people. I give what I think is the reality of what trauma is or what, sexual assault is, what suicide is, what violence is, all of the things that I've struggled with or have watched other people struggle with, I try and help people learn either the vocabulary, learn the scientific understanding of how the body works, maybe. You know, I try to give people the words to start the conversation. And then when I'm sitting with them, I give them the safe place to say what they need to say, right? Because what people have to say about their traumas is really dark. It's really hard. It's really hard to find someone that's safe to say, you know what? I've been thinking about killing myself for 10 years, you know, because nobody really knows how to deal with that in just your average everyday life. You know, people have other things going on. They have other things to do. And the stigmas that exist for a reason, unfortunately. And I think we haven't really given that a realistic understanding. Like, those stigmas are real, and they very much stand in place because people don't have safe people to go to, right? You go to the wrong person and you say, you know, I've been thinking about suicide for the last 10 years. And that person doesn't respect the privacy of what that really means, or, you know, whatever, and goes to police, goes to authorities, and those authorities pick that person up and take them to an emergency medical facility. And then they're traumatized there, right? Because that's not what they wanted to do. They just needed to have a conversation. It becomes a really complicated situation really quickly. And what I offer, it is risky to me. I think it can be risky to other people, but I think it's important to understand that I don't have any power in the situation, right? You come to me and you tell me you're thinking about suicide, I'm going to have a conversation with you. I'm going to talk about it. I'm not going to promise you success. I'm not going to promise you safety or, you know, a long life. What I am going to promise you is I'm going to listen to you and hear you and respect your privacy and offer you a place to share these things openly. And that has been remarkably successful. Now, that doesn't mean it's perfect. It's a hard conversation regardless. But what I think most people need is connection. And I think that's very simple. You know, and so when you take the authority and the power out of my end, it gives people the empowerment and the willingness to share in a moment where they need to be able to express themselves and share. And it's been remarkably successful for me, and it's been remarkably successful for other people that come to me, you know. And it's a hard job. It's a difficult job because you have to be very, very careful approaching these conversations. And if you're not good at it, you can hurt some people.
Yep, that's true. Especially if there are people who maybe aren't quite ready for having those conversations, and they feel like they're being pushed into it, and it's too soon for them, that could be not the best situation either. But you do have other resources available for people who may not be quite as far along on their own personal journey where they want to open up and talk about things, but they may still want to get a better understanding of what's going on with them. So through your podcast, through your social media and your website and everything, you have a lot of content there that people can check out and maybe help themselves along that journey. But I think the important part is they're able to help move in that right direction, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I had a client recently come to me. She'd been following me for about a year and a half before she ever decided to schedule an appointment with me. And now, like, it's becoming something that she's really comfortable with, and we're moving forward and continuing to kind of help her find better ways to really dig into herself and respect herself and appreciate herself, you know. And that's really the key, is that you find, you know, the depth of any conversation is really dependent on the level of safety within that conversation. So some people will look at a book and be like, that's the only conversation I can have right now. One where I read these pages when I feel it's safe, right? And so some people will get really invested in books or podcasts or or, you know, audiobooks or something like that, or content, right? Like TikTok. Like I put a lot of content out on TikTok and it's all free. Some people relish in that stuff, and that's the only thing they'll ever consume of me. But then there's some people that look at me and realize this guy gets it. This guy understands. And then when they meet me for the first time, they're like, wow, he not only gets it, but he wants to get me. He wants to understand who I am, and he wants to help me understand who I am. And so, you know, I found myself like, you know, one of the craziest things about this whole journey that I've been on of helping people, stepping outside of just helping myself, was the idea that not only did I become a person, a mental health coach of success of any type, but the success that I found was helping women specifically, and helping women who have gone through things like sexual assault. I've never gone through sexual assault, but I find myself being the one that's supporting people who have gone through something I've never gone through. And now, you know, what I've really learned is that how I approach those conversations, because when we talk about sex, when we talk about rape, when we talk about sexual assault, when we talk about these things that are really intimate and taboo and almost scary to talk about sometimes, the people they have talked to about this stuff, right? The therapists, the psychologists, the psychiatrists, the friends, the family, have made them feel either remarkably unsafe, shamed, or a number of other factors, right? And so when I approach these conversations, I'm not here to push boundaries. I'm here to allow you to open up about these difficult moments, these intimate moments, which I need to respect, right? I need to have a care and a level of competence in having the conversation without being immature, right? Which is one of the biggest problems, it sounds like, from what these women have dealt with. And it's not just women, but I deal with a lot of women. And it's a remarkably difficult conversation for them to have, because they can't trust people to just have the willingness to not tell them what's right or wrong, right? My job as a mental health coach is not to tell you what's right or wrong. It's to help you learn what's right or wrong. And that doesn't require me to tell you what's right or wrong. It just requires me to reveal to you very simple ideas, right? You know, ask the right questions, because more often than not, people don't need me to tell them what's right or wrong. They need me to reveal a confirmation of sorts, right? And so I ask the questions of, you know, what do you think about this? And then they tell me all what they think. And I just say, well, what are you asking me for, right? What's right or wrong? It seems like you know what's right or wrong, but you're unwilling to accept it because someone else told you it's not right. You know, and so it becomes this negotiation of sorts of within themselves, right? A very, very similar thing of what I did for myself. And it's, you know, everyone has that within themselves, I think, and we have it all in different ways. And that's always the challenge of trying to find what it is you're trying to negotiate with yourself and essentially get it out of the way. How do we build the values that support making the right decision for you? You know, and I think it's so important for people who are helping others to take their own sense of integrity out of it, unless it's needed, right? Where I had a client come to me a couple months ago regarding marital rape, right? She had been in a relationship for quite some time, and her husband didn't respect the idea. They had grown up in the church, and what ended up happening, or what's happening right now, is that we're working through this understanding of how to craft a relationship, especially a sexual relationship, that's healthy, right? And to address the issues that are apparent. And it becomes a really difficult conversation on both sides of the coin, because how do you tell someone they're wrong, but then also help this person on the other side say, you're absolutely right, this is wrong, right? You know, like helping her understand that this is not fair to you, this is not comfortable for you, but then also telling this person on the other side, you're hurting someone, you're causing problems. This needs to be addressed. You know, these conversations are remarkably hard, remarkably difficult.
Yeah. And I think not only are the conversations hard, that internal narrative that we have make things even harder, because the things that we're facing, the depression, the anxiety, the PTSD, the assaults, the things like that, those things are not indications that we are broken or that there's something wrong with us, whoever the person is who's dealing with this stuff. Those things are pretty normal human reactions to abnormal, stressful, traumatic situations, right?
Right.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that we have that mindset, and we need to break free of that mindset that something is wrong with us or that we're broken, because that's not true. We're experiencing a normal human reaction to abnormal situations. It's kind of the way I like to put it.
It's rational, right? It's quite simple. It's a rational response. It's a rational reaction. Now, that doesn't mean it remains logical, right? That's the hard part of this, of like, and that's often what people see, is that they see the response, but they see the response 10 years later. And then they look at you and say, you're doing this wrong, right? And then you look at yourself and you're like, you become defensive because this person doesn't understand the narrative. And that's when it becomes complicated, is because you're supposed to, how are you supposed to deal with this interaction where they don't realize that you've been through all of this stuff that you've been through, but now they're telling you what's right and wrong. And that's why, like, I look at, you know, one of the things I wrote in my book was, you're the only person that knows 100% of your context of your life, right? And you can't look at how other people look at you and say, I agree wholeheartedly all the time, because they don't know, right? Even your mother will never live with you 100% of your lifetime. Guess what? You got to go to the bathroom every once in a while, and she's not going to be there. And so nobody's ever going to see everything that happens to you, and nor do they need to. But you need to be able to, as a person, look at yourself and respect that you have a story that they don't need to know or have the right to know. And so when they say to you, this is what's right and wrong, you don't have to agree with it. And you don't have to explain yourself all the time, right? There are certain people you might want to explain to, right? That, you know, having a wife requires you to really be quite intimate with that conversation versus maybe your mother-in-law, right? Maybe your mother-in-law can fuck off and we can have a real deep conversation with your wife, right? Like that's a remarkably important kind of interaction, kind of an interactional rule that I think is so important. Is like, you need to be able to be okay with people not understanding everything. Or you can be like me and learn how to express all of it in the ways that I do, so people understand who I am. But guess what? Not everybody's going to understand it. And you got to be okay with that.
And some people may try to understand it. They may not even like it. And again, you kind of just have to be okay with that.
Right.
You know, like it's fine. You don't have to like me. You don't have to like the way I handle things, the way I deal with things. But this is me. This is who I am. Almost take it or leave it, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. I love that phrase. Like you can't waste years of your life looking at someone else and hoping they'll take you, right? Because ultimately you're not wasting your life. What you're wasting is your ability to perceive that your value is required elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a really profound thought when you think about it, is that you looking at one singular person and saying, I really want you to love me, is taking away from the opportunity for you to find that one person that really will love you. Right. And that's, you know, that's the human condition right there, is that we hope for things that we can't have, and we dismiss things that we can.
Yeah. I think that sums it up pretty well. Before we wrap up here, First off, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I really appreciate your perspectives and your openness and willingness to share your background and the things that you've experienced. But I want to give you the opportunity to let the listeners know where they can go to get in touch with you if they want more information, sure. Find out more about your coaching, your podcast, and even get a copy of your book.
Well, first of all, thank you, Scott. I appreciate this. And I can't wait to have you on my podcast fairly soon to reciprocate this conversation and learn a little bit more about you. But it's quite simple, DylanSessler.com. You can find me on any social media through my name, Dylan Sessler. My book's on Amazon. It's on Audible. I would recommend the Audible because I shared it. I did the voiceover. And I also added a bunch of off-script stuff. So I think the Audible's a little bit more complete. And then, yeah, Target.com, Barnes & Noble, it's all over the place. So, you know, feel free to hit me up on any social media. You know, you can schedule a meeting through my website. I'm here.
And I will have links to all of that in the show notes. So anyone who's looking to get in touch with Dylan or get a copy of his book, check out his podcast, all that stuff. Check out the show notes. You can click right through and we'll get you guys linked up and in touch. So thank you again, Dylan. I really appreciate your time coming on the show and sharing your story.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.